Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
And welcome to Arts and Antiques. I am Reverend Dr. D, sitting in for Elizabeth Stewart, who is on assignment today. And we are going to have some fun with our very special guest, who is basically going to have some fun with you over the coming weeks here in Santa Barbara and on his August tour. And his name is Gail McNeely, and he is, I hope I have this right, Gail. He's a clown, wears the red nose, sings songs, and enjoys performing for people who enjoy music. And he's going to be doing that here in Santa Barbara at the Unitarian Society of Santa Barbara. And that's going to be at 1535 Santa Barbara Street, August 23rd, which is only about a week or so away as of this conversation, at 3 p.m. And then in Ojai, at the Ojai Arts Center in Ojai, at 113 South Montgomery Street. And that is on August 30th at 4 p.m. And Gail, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I know you and I are going to have some fun. And Elizabeth would be bringing this up, certainly, because she knows my affinity with Ireland. My wife and I went there in 2002, around Christmas and New Year's, went back again in 2004, February, actually late January, so that we were there for her birthday, and fell in love and want to move. We're ready. Somebody adopt us. But you are also a fine Irish heritage as well, and it's a pleasure to speak with a kindred spirit.
Hey, thanks a lot. And I usually introduce myself as Gail Joseph Patrick McNeely.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, what are you going to do?
I'm from County Cleveland in Ohio. I've never been to Ireland, believe it or not, but I am flying to Dublin September 1st.
Do you need someone to carry your bags?
Oh, yes, yes. If you can buy the tickets, sure. So I'm really, I got invited by a guy named Benny McCabe. I was doing a protest on a corner with him. He was visiting from Dublin. And he found out I do a show called Archie and Mehitabel. Archie's a cockroach and Mehitabel's an alley cat. And Mehitabel's a reincarnation of Cleopatra, and he wanted to hear Mehitabel's voice, so I did it for him, and he says, you have to come to Dublin, you have to do that there, and you can stay at my house. And I said, will I perform in your house? And he says, no, there's a pub down the street, that's where you're going to perform, down at the pub. And so I accepted his invitation. And I'm staying at his place in Dublin for a few nights and then moving on to different parts of Ireland, Edinburgh. I have a friend that I met who lives near Edinburgh. Then I'm going to France, Italy, Greece. I'll be doing some teaching. I actually teach clowning. I'm teaching clowning right now to the second year conservatory students at PCPA Theater Fest. I have 20-year-olds, and they're all, I'm birthing 27 clowns in the next 2 weeks. So they'll all have a clown persona, they'll have a clown form, and they'll be able to improvise as clowns. I love doing that. I love teaching clown.
Why a clown? What is it about clowning that you enjoy so much? And would you ever consider being a rodeo clown?
I can answer the second question first. No, because I used to perform it as a clown at rodeos, but the rodeo would be part of a county fair. you know, and I didn't like even watching it. I love animals too much. Mm. And so, but I was the clown that would walk around in the rain with a bucket collecting rain and things like that at the fair. You know, my name was Barney. I was a silent clown then. Before that, I was a very noisy clown called Captain Plunge, Potty Pilot of the Year. And so I've been to many personas. Now that I'm older, I'm an older clown named Norbert Herbert. And so so I like being a clown, but I love teaching clowning. And I got involved. Why I got involved? I was a theater person. I did some work on Broadway. I did regional theater. And at one regional theater, the Barter Theater in Virginia, where they actually accepted barter. That's how the theater got started in the Depression. There was a clown named Avner the Eccentric, Avner Eisenberg, who's one of the great clowns in the world right now. And he did a show in that space. I never saw anything like it. And I went, I want to do that. I want to have a direct connection with the audience. I want to play with the audience. I want the audience to be my immediate partner. Because in theater, you know, the fourth wall and the lights are on you and you're talking to these people on stage. And obviously you're open to the audience because you want their applause or their tears or whatever, but you're not actually dealing with them directly. Avner did. Avner started a show. 10 minutes into it, two people came late. And they came right into the front seats and sat down. And he started the show over again from the very beginning. And I didn't know this, but they were plants. That was supposed to happen so that he could play them. Clowning is it's a lovely thing to do. I enjoyed it very much. I had my own clown troupe. We were called the Kitten Caboodle Clowns. And we toured the Northwest, Oregon, Washington. We got down to El Centro, California was we had a disastrous Southern California tour. We thought nobody in Southern California likes clowns. They don't like clowns, you know. People in Humboldt County, you know, oh, they love clowns, you know. Oregon, yeah, Washington State, oh yeah. But you come, we're cynical. We thought LA people were too cynical and they didn't like clowns. They weren't ready to just laugh at themselves. This is what clowning's about. You're helping them to laugh at themselves and how stupid we all are. We're all so stupid. There's a limit to intelligence, but there's no limit to stupidity.
And of course, there is the phrase, you can't fix stupid.
Right. I've never seen that fixed. Maybe you could. I can't.
No, I don't even want to try. No. Don't even want to try. You know, the first clown that I thought of, and I think of this gentleman as a clown, I grew up watching him on TV primarily, that you made me think of, and I'm curious about his influence on your life, and that is the late, great Red Skelton.
I knew you were going to say that. I felt it because...
We're psychic. Yeah,
well, I have a very close friend, Jane Hill, in Humboldt County, and she said, you know, you remind me of Red Skelton, and where is the audience for that kind of humor nowadays? It's a gentle humor. It's based on humanity. It's not gags. It's not jokes or anything like that. It's the relationship that, like the great silent stars, you know, that we know, Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin, and you know, it's a very different. We call it theater clown in the business, and it was reborn. But see, I was a clown for many years, and I never wanted to go back to theater because I didn't. I knew what that was like, and I liked clowning better. Yeah. Then a friend of mine said, "How would you like to play a tap dancing singing cockroach in a musical?" I couldn't say no. It was very attractive to me. That's Archie, the poetic cockroach. And so I did the musical, Archie and Mehitabel, and that got me back into theater and musicals because I discovered that what you know as a clown and what you do as a clown is the same thing you do when you're doing a musical. And there is a relationship with the audience. And that's how I got back into musicals. In fact, I do Archie, one of his songs, The Song of the Moth, in my touring show right now.
Mm. Well, now folks are going to hear original pieces and old Broadway tunes from your voice, Gail McKinney, on your, it's a four-stop tour here in August. And of course, by the time this conversation that we're having is heard, you will have already appeared in San Luis Obispo, and then, of course, also in Santa Maria. That is actually one that, I don't know, maybe it's still available on the 16th of August, which I believe is just a couple of days from this conversation. And that's going to be at St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Santa Maria, and that will be at 3 p.m. on the 16th. And there's a website you folks can go to. It is GaileMcNeely.org. That's GaileMcNeely.org. And we hope that you will make it a point to join him on his August tour. It's called My Life in Song, and he'll be joined by a pianist and Pacific Conservatory Theater musical director. And his name is Paul Mars. Pronounce that. It ends with a ski. How's that gentleman's name?
Marzulkowski.
Marzulkowski. Thank you. Yeah. Paul Marzulkowski. And McKinney will sing original and renditions of selections from his Broadway days. And he tours with Marzulkowski. He toured with him last fall and basically had great fun in sharing the stage and being accompanied by the pianist. And, you know, going back to Red, one of the one of my favorite one man elements that he did, where he stood with a little patriotic music way in the background, and he spoke about the meaning of the words in the Pledge of Allegiance. And this was before they added a couple of words to it. And I thought, wow, you know, this is, you know, and those are kind of profound. I know that John Wayne did that too, with one of our patriotic songs. It may have been the national anthem for all I know. But I find this really interesting. I want to ask you about, because you mentioned the cynicism that you felt going into LA and so forth some time ago. What's your feeling about why, and maybe you can give us a reason why there are some people who claim to be afraid of clowns? What's going on there?
Well, that can happen because of the way they're introduced to a clown first. For instance, if I come up to a child in someone's arms, whether they're 1 year old, sometimes 2 year old, whatever, I keep my distance. You wait for the signs from the child, and if a clown doesn't do that and rushes to the child because they want to, you know, say hello or be funny or whatever, the child, that may trigger something in them that they're afraid of clowns for the rest of their time. Some kids are afraid of makeup. That when they see, they don't know what that is, yeah. White face and all the things you can have, big smiles. They know it's phony, basically, and they're afraid of it. So fear comes if you had a bad experience with clowns. That's what I find.
And you do have the makeup, the face paint, and so forth.
No, actually, no, I don't.
You do not?
No. My Captain Plunge was a white face clown, but after that, I didn't do it. And Norbert Herbert, it's all you really need is the world's smallest mask, and that's the red nose. And I may heighten my eyebrows a little bit or something, put a little bit of rouge on just to enhance the look.
But they get the real you.
Yeah, it is me. And yeah. And you don't have to have a nose on to be a clown. You know that Red Skelton didn't wear a clown nose. But he was a great clown. All right. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of, the names sometimes go out of, who is the great, Mark and Mindy.
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams was a great clown, wasn't he?
And that one movie that he was in as the doctor, and he would wear the red nose.
Oh, yeah, Patch Adams. Oh. Patch Adams. Yeah. So clowns come in all different forms. And we've only talked about men. There are great women clowns. Think of Lucille Ball,
Yeah.
Vernon Shirley. You know, you had real comic characters. They lived in our world, but they were of another world too.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I love seeing good clowns perform. And Joe Diefenbacher is around the world right now. And I saw the Pickle Family Circus. I was inspired by that too, by Lorenzo Pickle and Bill Irwin and Mr. Sniff. Those clowns were the same with, if you go to see Cirque du Soleil, the clowns are generally the introduction to the circus. They're in the audience. They're creating a relationship with you in the audience. And then when they go onto the stage, they bring you with them. And that's the way you enter the circus. There's genius stuff being done like that. But all of that is possible in theater too. And we see it done really well, like PCPA, their show Come From Away was amazing. They brought you right into that time when the towers had fallen and all these people were diverted to Canada. And then the people in Canada in a little town took them in, fed them, did everything with them, created a relationship with them. They even started to do music together, you know? So this openness, that's why I like small audiences. I don't like big stages with big lights anymore. I like a room where I can see everybody I'm singing to, and I can relate to them personally, and I can give them a lyric and give them a lyric. And there's that bond that happens in a show.
There are, I think, four clown names I can think of, four clowns that I can think of through the past 40, 50, maybe more years. The first one, of course, is Bozo the Clown, probably one of the first television clowns. Not necessarily the first, but very close. And of course, he had the face paint and the red nose and so forth. then there is, of course, Krusty the Clown from The Simpsons. And obviously, we mentioned Robin Williams, and especially in Patch Adams. And then I'm thinking of course, one closer to time that we're living in, and that would be Fizbo the Clown from Modern Family television series, where one of the characters loved to play the clown. He grew up on a farm, but somehow he managed to incorporate clowning. And his husband was not a real fan of it. He always felt as though he was embarrassing because of the antics that he would go through. How far, I guess that's an interesting perspective too, is there are those who feel that certain individuals, they go just a little too far. They maybe cross some kind of a line. Is there a line that you have where you keep your humor and your physical comedy, so to speak, I don't want to say necessarily reined in, but you've trained yourself to say, I will go this far and no further.
Well, I don't know if it's a conscious, it's not a conscious decision like that, but it's a relationship. And you know, in relationships, they only work when they're balanced, you know. So if you do come on too strong, I've made mistakes, you know, like I play Santa Claus too on occasion.
Oh.
And so Santa has to watch what areas they move into. Like Santa, only once in Santa's life did he talk about religion at all. And because that's not something Santa, that's a world that Santa isn't in.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But clowns, it depends on what world they're in. My clown, Captain Plunge, he had a bedpan and a plunger. And he called it his CBPP, and he would talk into it. And he was very bold, you know, with the audience. It was up in Humboldt County in the 70s, you know. And so then I was letting a lot out, you know. Then I became Maestro Marco, and I was the ringmaster of the circus. So I was the straight man against the zanies in the other clowns. But then I was Barney the Clown, who was sort of a kind of a sad sack in a way. And it was a very personal thing. And he didn't even talk. you know. And now Norbert Herbert is very, there's Barney too. Barney is a clown that I played, and he's pretty much me in clown form. And he has a little puppet that looks like him that dances on the heads of the kids and everything. So it's a very gentle clown. But you always, in everything we do, who are the audience? You know, there's an exercise in that I did at Del Arte in clown school, where everybody got to play the king or the queen, and the rest of the people played courtiers. And once everybody had done the exercise, then the teacher, Carlo Mazzoni Clementi, said, "What kind of king should you be?" And the answer is, "Who are my courtiers?" You have to be the leader of the people that you're dealing with. You can't take control and tell them what to do. You have to know who they are, or they'll revolt against you. And I think that's true of all performing, that you have to know your audience.
Yeah.
You have to give them what you think they're ready for. I know I did a show with Tom Lehrer, a tribute to Tom Lehrer, last fall with Paul Mazurkowski. And I sang the song Smut, which at the time it was written was very funny, and I still find humor in it. But after I sang the song to the audience at the Unitarian Church, I said, "I have a feeling that song, I don't think you related to it the way we used to in the old days. I think I won't do that one again." You know, you get the feeling from the audience, this doesn't work nowadays. It may have worked then, but it doesn't work nowadays.
I remember my acting coach sharing with me, and this was back in my 40s. She said that what you want to do is you want to take your energy, you want to break through the fourth wall, energetically speaking, and you want to sort of embrace or surround the audience with your energy that then pulls in the energy from the audience, so that you, like you were just describing, you feel where they're coming from. Now, if you're in a play or something, a performance of that nature that has a script, you can't change the script to accommodate the audience. But it is that kind of a relationship where you're drawing upon the energy from the audience as well, in that respect, and then you're sharing yours with them. So there is a sort of a communal kind of thing going on there, a reciprocal energetic happening, right?
Yeah, and I was thinking of a little boy, the son of some friends of mine. He might have been 7 or 8 years old. We're walking in a park in Pittsburgh, and he says, he called me Freddie. That was my nickname. "Freddie, did you ever die on stage?" And I said, Oh yes, yes, yes. I was in Julius Caesar, and I was Brutus's servant. And when he killed himself, I had to kill myself. He said, No, I don't mean that. "Did the audience ever not like you?" That's what he said. So and I didn't know how at that age he knew that actors do die on stage. The audience is not with them. They haven't created that relationship, and they're dying. And he told me in his, now he's a 30-year-old guy, and he says, "Freddie, why I knew that was I was watching stand-up comics when I was that age, and they would be saying to the audience, 'Hey, I'm dying up here. Yeah, I'm dying up here.'"
Yeah.
And that's something the clown can do too. The clown can reveal to the audience how they're feeling. And so there is no distance between me as an actor and me as a clown when I am on stage. Some of the things are serious things I sing about. You know, it's not all, my show is not all laughs.
Yeah.
I never put on a clown nose in this show, but there are times that I'm the clown. The closest I get is Groucho Marx and Lydia the Tattooed Lady. I really love that song, you know, so there you have to do something physically. But the rest of the time, I'm just Gail McNeely, the age I am, the way I look. And then you embody the characters, and all my songs tell stories, like the stonemason from Working. It's all about what it means to build houses of stone, you know, and I think the people relate to that, the people in the audience.
Well, one of my favorite Groucho bits was actually on, I didn't actually see it that I can recall, but I have this 25th anniversary double album set, might be even triple album, of the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where he sings, and I share this with people all the time just because we're killing time to before we get started today. Today is Father's Day and we're giving you a tie. It's not much we know, it's just our way of showing you. We think you're a regular guy. According to our mother, you're our father, and that's good enough for us today. Today is Father's Day and we're giving you a tie. Oh my God. And I just think about that all the time when I think about him and of course the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And I was just watching a piece with George Carlin. You talked about dying on stage, where he was talking about these things. He said, I'm going to talk about death. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit because we need to discuss this. And now, of course, up here, when you're on stage, you know, you could bomb, you know, and but if you do really good, you killed them, i.e. the audience, and that kind of thing. And I just think the way we use words sometimes to describe what happens in our lives, you know, it's kind of an amazing thing. And yet this whole fear with the realities of our mortality in that regard, you have an extraordinary gift that you give to people that has been borne out by philosophers, one in particular in our modern time, who was diagnosed with a disease and given what, like 6 weeks to live. And he said, no. And he began watching this Three Stooges and funny movies and TV shows. And I was watching a video talking about laughter and what it does biochemically to us and so forth, and that can actually increase our longevity. And Reader's Digest, they had it almost right. They said laughter is the best medicine. And from after watching this one video about laughter, I'm going, no, laughter is the only medicine. And you provide that, don't you? And you help people, in a manner of speaking, to extend their lives by giving them the gift of laughter.
Yeah, and being in the space with people laughing, it affects everybody near you too. And communal laughter is like a release for everybody, because there's all the other things that attack us during the day, and no matter what. And so coming back to our sense of humor, our connection with each other. You mentioned Groucho Marx. I worked with his son, Arthur Marx. He and Robert Fisher wrote the book to The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, the original musical I did at PCPA back in 87. I got to play the ghost.
Ah.
It was a wonderful, wonderful script. The music, I'm doing a couple songs from it in my show. And Arthur was so good to show how open he was. I said to him one day, I said, Arthur, you know, getting into the song is difficult, but if I could say this, that would be the bridge. And he looked at me and said, well, then say it. You know, that was the kind of writer he was, Arthur Marx. He was very different than his father. He was a gentle soul, very thoughtful. You know, you wouldn't recognize him on the street. And Robert Fisher was a great writer. The two of them wrote over 1,000 episodes for TV together, Danny Thomas and all these other shows.
Oh.
And so to work with them was a great pleasure. They just they open your every good people, like people like Christopher Plummer. I did Cyrano with him on Broadway, and I learned so much from watching him. I was just in the chorus at that age, you know, but I'd watch his death scene every night as Cyrano, when he dies and he takes on death, you know, at the very end.
Did he die well?
Oh, he did. And he was a technical actor, really, you know, basically, but he had heart too. And so yeah, you learn so much from the good people you work with, and you hope that you pass that along yourself.
Yeah, that's exciting. Folks, I think that you would be doing yourself, your family, your friends, anybody that you can take with you to see Gail McNeely. Go to GailMcNeely.org to find out more. But I'm going to tell you right now that in Santa Maria on the 16th, you will be able to see Gail McNeely at St. Peter's Episcopal Church at 402 South Lincoln Street on the 16th at 3 p.m. And then the Unitarian Society of Santa Barbara at 1535 Santa Barbara Street on the 23rd of August, and that will be at 3 p.m. And then in Ojai, he's going to be at 113 South Montgomery. I should think Montgomery Wards at the Ojai Arts Center. 113 South Montgomery Street on the 30th, near the end of, right before Labor Day at 4 p.m. Now, these are kind of early shows, as opposed to, say, later in the evening, like 6 or 7. People go out to have a little bite to eat and then come to see you. They'll come to see you and then go out and have a bite to eat.
That's our idea. That's our idea. And we want the show to be accessible to everybody. And some people don't drive after dark. And yet they'd love to see this music. They'd like to hear the music. In Ojai, we set the show a bit later because it's hot in Ojai, and we're hoping that the heat will die down more by 4 o'clock. So you want the audience to be comfortable. If they're not comfortable, they don't enjoy themselves.
Exactly.
And giving them comedy before they go to dinner, why not? Why not?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, you should make it a point. Go to, once again, the website is gailmcneely.org as we continue with Arts and Antiques here on AM 1290, FM 96.9, and streaming live at AM1290KZSB.com. Here with a very special guest sitting in for Elizabeth Stewart, who is on assignment, and we're talking with Gail McNeely about his performances coming up, and it's probably just going to take a shot in the dark here, probably no more than a couple of hours. You got a little intermission in between your two sets. I want to ask you a little bit about, we could say, clowning around as a very broad term. But I want to ask you about what your perspective is, your definition and all of that good stuff, the difference between what you do and what we like to call, and again, it's poking fun, what we call satire. And several of my favorite people are like the late Stan Freberg. Oh, my God, I loved that guy and his album. He had two double albums that came out, and I have the CDs. The United States of America, the early years, and then the United States of America, the middle years. And hilarious stuff. A lot of the humor would not go over real well today in this climate, but it is still just funny as all get out. And my dear friend, who I had my best friend for 53 years until he passed away a few years ago, we would do lines in the car or walking. We would play them out. One of our favorites, of course, was where Christopher Columbus landed on the shores of what was the Americas, and the Indians were there, and they greeted each other, and they get into a conversation, and one of the Indians says, "You have a dream?" And Chris says, "Yes, I do. Would you like to talk about it?" "Yes, I would. I'd like to bring the finer things to this land, pasta and Italian food," and so on and so on and so on. And it's just, it's hilarious stuff. Or they're on the ocean, and the captain, Chris, is going up into the, observation. I can't even remember what the name of crow's nest. And so let me just climb up into the rigging here. And the king is with him. And the king says, "You mean on top of everything else, this ship is rigged?" Just funny stuff. What about satire then and now? Because it doesn't seem as though, I'd like to think there are people who are not afraid, who are willing to be satirical regardless of what might happen. We hope nothing does, because we do have freedom of speech. But talk to us about satire.
Boy, I... I'm really hooked into satire. And it was Tom Lehrer, not Stan Freberg. In fact, now I want to listen to the albums you mentioned. That wasn't my route. And so, yeah. and I see from what you said that the perspective is really good. It was I went to Jesuit school. It was a high school and a college. And in the Jesuit school, I was a sophomore in college, and someone had an album. That was the week that was. And it was a whole album of Tom Lehrer. And it just blew my mind. I had never heard anything like it. And the song that really got me, because I had been in the seminary at 1.2, was the Vatican Rag.
Oh.
And that song, and it was so naughty. At that time in 1964 or 5, it was naughty. Yeah. And I loved to sing it to people. I remember being at the prom that year and going table to table and singing the Vatican Rag. You know, so it's taking serious topics and poking fun. Everything is pokeable. You know, mm-hmm. there's nothing that shouldn't be pokeable. You can do it in good taste or bad taste.
True.
And I think that the songs I was afraid to sing in my show will all go together when we go. And I don't do that in this particular show, but I only did it when I got to Humboldt County for my birthday party. I just turned 80, and I did my 80th birthday party in Arcata, and I sang "We'll All Go Together When We Go," right, which is about being bombed, right?
Yeah.
And so, and with each verse, the energy in the room got higher and higher. The laughter rose. All of these people understood the satire of it, the wordplay. So satire, it depends on the audience. It just depends on where they're ready to go with you. You can sing Poisoning Pigeons in the Park all day, and it's light fare. But, you know, "So Long, Mom, I'm Out to Drop the Bomb" might hit them differently. Or like I said, "Smut," I pulled that from the future shows because it's gone. It's seen its day. We don't need to do that one anymore. But there's other ones that I love to do. But satire, I took it. Well, I came here to Santa Maria to work at PCPA. I had worked here in 85, 87, 89. I came back in 2000. I bought a house. My work there ended, and I had to do something. Mm. And so I started to do satires. I started, W was such a fun person to satirize. And so I did a show called The Wizard of What? And he was the Wizard of What?
Mm-hmm.
We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of What? Follow the oily brick road. Follow the oily brick road. And I took, you know, John Kerry was a cowardly lion, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia were the tin men in the same suit, one leaning to the left and one to the right.
Ah.
And so I had great fun rewriting all the songs, including "Somewhere Over the Rainbow." I rewrote it as "Somewhere Over the Silo." It's a missile silo. And so I loved doing satire. And then we couldn't get rid of W, so he was there again. And so then I did Pope the Musical, where he was about to leave the presidency and didn't know what to screw up after he left. And so Dick Cheney says, "Why don't you run for Pope?" And he says, "That's a good idea. Get on to that." And so, so he runs for Pope. He becomes Cardinal Wunderbar. They get rid of the Pope. They hide him, and so he's the only one to run. And the only one to run against him is Sister Dominiki Niki Niki, the singing nun, and that's my character in this show. I also played the Pope Paparazzi. We called him because it was rap singer. And so anyway, so we made fun, and the audience became cardinals, and they voted for Pope at the end. And so politics and religion, you know, they say, my father always said, if you don't know someone, don't talk about politics, religion, or how to raise your kids.
Yep.
And those are really great topics to get into. So, and you know, is the Lord a lady? Is the Lord a lady? Is the Lord a lady? So anyway, different things come out with my strong Catholic background. You know, I have a lot to say about those things, but you have to do it with a really good spirit. You have to do it, the audience knowing that you're poking fun all the time. Mm-hmm. And our audiences knew that 100%. They yeah. got it, you know, and they could laugh at things that we don't laugh at often enough.
Yeah, there's a line in Stan's a bit. They're getting prepared. They're preparing basically for Thanksgiving dinner, the very first one. And off in the distance, you hear these two guys walking by saying, "So, Harv, who are you taking to the witch burning tonight?" "Well, I'm going to take Martha and da-da." And they continue off. And then, of course, George Washington walks into Martha to, oh my goodness, Betsy Ross's place. And there she is. She's sewing away. And so he's coming in to get the flag, you know. And he looks at what she's working on. And here, let me just bite the thread off here. And he basically says, "Red, white, and blue? You know, what is this? Stars and stripes? Look, you run the War Department and I'll run the sewing department, okay?" And of course, she's upset too, because he came in and he's stomping snow all over her early American rug. I mean, it's just, it's funny stuff. And there are so many people who do incredible satire. I mean, I still love watching, for example, the nightly news on Saturday Night Live, because it's most of the time it is satire, but it's also very poignant. As a matter of fact, I was watching Peter Jennings on TV one night doing his newscast. I think I was 15, 16 years old. I'm thinking, man, we need a laugh track. I'd love to have a laugh track. It wasn't long after that The Daily Show came along. And those folks with Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and these kinds of things. And of course, in this era, we've got a serious, serious problem with people who can't take a joke. And so what they do is they attempt to undermine somebody's life and livelihood. But that is the beautiful thing about humanity and individuals. We're very resilient, aren't we?
Mm, yeah, people.
We bounce back.
Yeah, people are, but our leaders are not. They're not resilient in the sense that we're resilient. You know, if they don't have control, what do they got? You know, but we as individuals. I was just watching. Well, I love Thich Nhat Hanh as a teacher, and he was talking today about finding a way to peace. And the fact that we're all brothers and sisters in Vietnam, the two sides, they were brothers and sisters. And you people join a side and that becomes their whole philosophy, their whole dogma, their whole belief. And then they fight the people who they're actually related to.
Yeah.
These are the brothers within a Vietnamese family. One might join the communists and the other group. And the groups would say, you have to kill that person. And when we kill the other person, we kill ourselves, basically. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how I got into that.
I kind of drew you there. My brother and I, we're on opposite ends politically, but we had a conversation three years ago following my elder sister's memorial. And I could see where this was going. So I made the commitment to myself. This is my brother. We are blood, and there is nothing that's going to divide us. We're not going to become estranged. We may not agree on certain things, but that's okay. At the end of the conversation, there were three challenges that we both agreed needed to be dealt with. Maybe we didn't agree on how, but that didn't matter. And now he is assisting me with friends of his to help to design repairs for a deck in our new home and so forth. I mean, we still have the relationship, and I'm not going to give that up. And I share that because I hope others will understand that it is possible. It really is to get back to what is really important in our lives. And it's not the politics. It's not the religion or anything else. It's the connection. It is the relationship that you work to foster within these programs that you put on that are coming up here, folks. Number one in Santa Maria on the 16th, and that's going to be at the St. Peter's Episcopal Church, and that will be at 3 p.m. at 402 South Lincoln Street in Santa Maria. Santa Barbara, you will have an opportunity on the 23rd at 1535 Santa Barbara Street. That's going to be at the Unitarian Society of Santa Barbara. And then in Ojai, at the Ojai Center, 113 East Montgomery Street, on the 30th at 4 p.m. with a suggested donation of $15. And there is room for everyone as we continue talking with our very special guest, Gail McNeely, here on Arts and Antiques on AM 1290, FM 96.9, streaming live at am1290kzsb.com. You know, I do programs of my own with my radio program, a podcast, video cast called Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And the time always goes by too fast. And when I sit in for Elizabeth, time always goes by too fast. But I want to give you the last couple, 3 minutes here to share with our audience from your heart what you would like for them to come to your performances with. And hopefully leave with.
Well, come to it with an open mind, that's for sure. And that's how friends are made, when both people have an open mind. Come ready to laugh, come ready to cry, because life is both. And the things that I'm sharing are pretty personal. It may be a song that was written for me, like I played a handyman in the show. So, you know, the song is handy. I share that. And I share my feelings and stories. I have a bit of stories because I've worked with Barbara Eden and Theodore Bickel and Raul Julia. And they're all interesting people to know about. But the show, you thought it might be a couple hours. What we try for, because you don't want to ever do too much.
Right.
You want them wanting more. You want them to say, he should have sung another song in that first act. I was ready. So, but we're going to try to do 45 minute first act, a nice intermission with some good treats, and then a 30 to 35 minute second act. So you go out wanting more, not feeling like we've overdone you. You know, we've fried you on both sides. I love singing to people. It's a great joy to work. Mark Marcinkowski is a gem. I don't know, he's going to have a big career ahead of him. He can play anything. He can do anything. He's so sensitive. And we have grand pianos at each of the four venues so that it sounds good because it's a good piano also. So I'm very lucky to be alive, one, to be still have my voice just the way it always is, to work with great people, and to look forward to entertaining good people in the communities I love.
Well, I'm behind you by about 13 years. I have begun my 67th revolution around the sun. It's kind of how I put it now. And I am having the time of my life. Doing programs like this, filling in for Elizabeth, doing my programs, and doing the kinds of things in our new home that we just moved into almost, I can't believe it's almost a year ago. And I love having conversations like this. And thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of Elizabeth's program, as well as a part of my life. And I wish you much success and much laughter.
Yes, here's to laughter.
Here's to laughter. Cheers. Once again, don't forget about the events coming up in Santa Maria, Santa Barbara, and Ojai on the 16th, 23rd, and 30th, respectively. Go to gailmcneely.org. Find out more. And please come back for our next edition of Arts and Antiques with Elizabeth Stewart. I'm Reverend Dr. D. Richard Dugan, and you folks have yourselves an absolutely fantastic and laughter-filled day.